Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. If you want to connect with me, you can do so through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Macroaggressions. Frankly, I'm surprised I'm still there, but I am. They are going through a bit of a purge, and they don't like my flavor of insanity, so I would expect that I won't be there for too much longer, but for now, you can find me there. Thank you to our sponsors. We could not do the show without your amazing support. We've got a new one, Solar Powered Lifestyle. It's a small family-owned business. We love that. They listen to the show. We love that, too. That helps. They're in the solar power industry, right? They're focused on harnessing the power of the sun. Look, we're going to need energy wherever we can get it, right? We've done a lot of talk here about getting prepared and getting yourself ready for things like that. I think this might be a case of, if you have a solar system, you don't have to have the biggest one in the world too. You just have to have a small one. It'll generate electricity for you in time of need. If you're interested in, if you're like van life guy driving across country, they've got panels for that. Camping, emergencies, job site. They've got what you need. They've got the brands that, the most popular brands. They have EcoFlow, Jackery, and all the major ones there. And so I'll tell you what, do this. If you're in the market for solar power, or you just want to see what's going on in the world of solar power, go take a look at their website, solarpowerlifestyle.com. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. It's veteran-owned business. It's family-owned business. I love the guy. He's cool. We've been talking about things. He's listening to the show. They understand what's going on. They understand what we're facing, what we're up against. They have free shipping on all their products. They have a 30-day price match guarantee. So if you find your product that you just bought somewhere else cheaper, then they'll make up the difference to you. When you spend $100, they'll donate $10 to a charity of your choice. They're good guys, man. It's a good little family business over there. So take a look, solarpowerlifestyle.com, promo code MACRO. The link will be in the description as well. And also thanks to True Hemp Science. They are making the best hemp-based CBD out there from their facility in Austin, Texas, another small business that likes the show. And we love that. We love supporting the smaller businesses that are out there. I'll tell you what, True Hemp Science sent me some products. I've been vocal about this. I'm on my second round with Bioactive Silicate. It's a little little container, it's 2 ounces of liquid. You take a gallon jug of distilled water, dump that in there, shake it all up every morning and every evening. You do like a 2 ounce shot of this distilled water with the bioactive silicate mixed in there. And what it does is it helps to bring your pH level in your body back to normal. We should be at 7.0 because of our diets and, you know, things like that. We wind up getting sort of off center. This helps to alkalize the body, bring it back into balance where it should be. It helps to kill bacteria and biofilm, kills nanobacteria, which clogs arteries. It detoxifies the body and it alkalizes the body as well. It helps with joints, tendons, tissue repair, flexibility, skin health, wrinkle prevention, sleep regulation. It's pretty amazing. It's only about $40 for one of these little bottles if you want to get that. And it is quite literally the easiest thing you can do in the morning when you get up. Just do a little shot. It'll take you 2 seconds and you're ready to go. So take a look. TrueHempScience.com/macroaggressions. Link will be in the description. And again, on your way out, use the promo code macro to save yourself a couple bucks. And thank you to our sponsors. We appreciate them. I'll tell you, I was thinking about that. I was having a conversation with Steve Poikkanen from Slow News Day and AM Wake Up. By the way, if you're one of those people like in the morning when you're getting dressed and you want to watch usually turn on the TV while you've got something, don't do that anymore. Turn on Rockfin and watch AM Wake Up with Pasta and Steve. They're fantastic. And Steve and I were talking about psychedelics. As we do from time to time. He's getting ready to write a big, he might even write a book about it. But we're talking about psychedelics and the creep in from not just the pharmaceutical industry, which obviously is going to be dangerous, but big tech as well. And so it's like, ooh, boy, is this frustrating. Because on the one hand, you love the fact, or at least I love the fact, that psychedelics are finally getting their... they're starting to get recognition for the beneficial healing powers that they have. And you go, great, we're going to talk about this. It's going to make its way into society and things are going to get better. And then you go, yeah, but Big Pharma is going to control it. And Peter Thiel's going to finance it. And you go, oh, God damn it. These are the wrong people to be involved with psychedelics. You know, I don't want tech billionaires involved with it. I want Terrence McKenna, you know, living on some guy's couch to be involved in it, because I just think that it keeps it a little bit more, authentic, organic, less open to fuckery by the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, next thing you know, they'll be selling you mushrooms in pills and it'll be like, $100 a month for your prescription and it won't do all that much. And then, they'll find a way to screw it up like they always do. But at least we're having the conversation, which is a whole, I'm 30 plus years out from the first time I tried psychedelics as a college freshman. And I remember saying at the time, mushrooms, first thing I did. I remember saying at the time, this is, it's fascinating and it's a crazy ride and it's all these things, but I felt way better afterwards, days afterwards, like weeks afterwards. And I remember having a conversation with my mom and I'm like, Mom, I did mushrooms. And she's like, don't tell me these things. And I'm like, I'm going to tell you these things because I'm telling you right now, there's something very beneficial about them. And I don't know what it is. And I'm a freshman in college. I don't know anything, but I have a feeling. I feel it. I feel better. And every time I did mushrooms, I felt better. Now, not being a scientist and not understanding organic chemistry and all this stuff, I couldn't tell you why. I just knew I did. And it was very real. And I wasn't making it up. And I wasn't using it as like the justification to keep doing mushrooms or whatever. I honestly felt better. Well, now the science is coming out. And now it's explaining why that is. And I think it's interesting. We're going to get into that too. But I want to say this to, before we go on this long, strange trip. There is a habit of lumping all substances into one category and saying drugs. Those are drugs. Drugs are bad. Drugs are bad, okay? You know, and some drugs are really bad. It's undeniable, okay? And I'm not trying to say that everybody should all rush out and do psychedelics. What I'm saying is that if you are dismissive of it, just because it's a drug, and you've been taught that drugs are dangerous and drugs are addictive and drugs lead you down a bad path, well, you know, that's kind of partially true. But the problem is we have to first go back and differentiate what we're talking about when we're talking about drugs. Because are we talking about illegal drugs? Illegal drugs, and they, well, yeah, we've got the drug schedule and everything, and the drug schedule is the drug schedule, and you know that they write that the severity of the drugs based on the schedule. No, they don't. I'm going to get to that too. The drug schedule is a fucking joke. It is totally inverted. I mean, it is backwards and out of sorts. So can drugs ruin your life and get you addicted and take everything away from you? 100%. Yes. Most definitely do not mess around. I mean, look, let me backtrack. Do whatever you feel is right. Okay. I'm not going to come out and say, don't do it, because then I sound like your dad and I don't want to do that. But do this though, at least get honest about what drugs are super dangerous and what drugs are classified as being super dangerous, not because they're dangerous to you, but because they're dangerous to the establishment. And once again, when I get through the schedule, you'll understand the differentiation between this, because just because a drug is a Schedule 1 drug doesn't mean that it's going to kill you. It might, but it doesn't mean that for sure. So look, heroin and cocaine and methamphetamines and fentanyl and all these things, if you want to try it and you want to go down that path and you want to see what it does to you and you want to play around and you want to dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, go for it. But if things go wrong, you cannot act surprised, because how many cases, I mean, look at Philadelphia, you know, look at it. Oh, God damn, I forget the name of the street. Someone will help me with it. But the where all the junkies are, that shooting gallery where people are just standing there and they're like frozen, sort of like, you know, like paralyzed in some sort of heroin nod or fentanyl nod or whatever. They're in some ketamine hole. You know, that doesn't look like fun to me. That looks like what you do when you have nothing going on in your life and you've fallen into this really dark abyss. You can get out of that. You can get out of that. Jack Allen from Conspiracy or Kojak. Conspiracy or, oh, I'm going to mess it up. Anyway, Jack Allen, his podcast, he is very vocal about it, having a 10-year struggle with heroin addiction, beating it, getting himself turned around, got a great job. He's jacked up. Conspiracy or just coincidence? Sorry, Jack, for butchering the name of your show. I was just on it. He's recently married. He's got it all. He's got it all now. He didn't when he was on heroin. So look, I don't want to come across as saying, oh, Charlie's the guy who says just go do all these drugs. No. Let's be very clear about what we're talking about, what has value, and what ruins your life. Now, if you know the stories of how heroin and can destroy your life, and you choose to do it anyway, that's your choice. But when things go bad, don't act surprised. I'm just saying that if you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm addicted to heroin. Really? You can't believe you're addicted to heroin? What part of heroin led you to believe that you wouldn't be addicted to it? Did you think that you were just going to dabble in it, like kind of tiptoe around the edges? Maybe. Some people do, I guess. But that is not a recipe for success. I like a good party as much as the next guy. But look, there are some things that you just are going to know. You know, if you mess with these drugs, you're going to have problems. And so do so at your own peril. But that's not psychedelics. Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something totally different. Now, psychedelics are like, they're like a roller coaster. Okay, let's use this as a metaphor. They're scary and fun all at the same time. Sometimes you can see the tracks in front of you and you know where you're going. And sometimes during the ride, you can't. And that's a little disconcerting for some people. And it's kind of tough because you are no longer in control of things for the most part. And you have taken your hands off the wheel, so to speak, and you are along for this ride. If you decide halfway through, oh, I don't like this, I want to get off, I'm sorry. They don't stop the roller coaster to let the kid throwing up off the ride. You got to ride till the very end, kid. You got to deal with that, okay? You have to do that. So if you want to get on, if you want to take the ride, if you want to buy the ticket and take the ride, as Hunter S. Thompson says, just understand, you're on the ride for as long as the ride lasts. So know that going in. And I think also when people talk about, well, you know, with psychedelics, you never know what you're going to get. You know, they're super dangerous and everything. For sure, be very careful about what you are taking on it, whether it's vitamins or LSD or cocaine or whatever. The problems that people get into is when they don't know what's in this, what's in the substance that they've taken. I have had that experience myself. It's very scary. I don't recommend it. It didn't turn out too bad in my case. I did accidentally take something that I thought was one substance, and it turned out to be another substance. And the worst case scenario for me that night turned out to be kind of funny, but I was very much glued to a booth at a nightclub where I could not get up and I couldn't really move, and I was having a hard time communicating. And the person, air quotes, that slid up next to me, a friend of the table, I don't know, the next table over, was a rather tall transsexual Asian woman with a New York Yankees baseball cap that wanted to tell me her entire life story, starting at DNA up until that evening, you know. And I just was glued there like, holy shit, I can't get away, you know. So sometimes the wheels come off of the ride, and it turns out to be a funny story where you get like stuck talking to, having a transsexual talk to you all night long. And that could be bad, but really in my case, it just turned into kind of a funny side note. But I say that because, especially with fentanyl these days, they don't know what they're taking. And if you're taking something and you think it's one thing and it turns out to be another, that's fine. If you think you're taking ecstasy and somebody gives you ketamine and you're just kind of glued to a booth, it's quite another thing if you think you're doing cocaine and it's fentanyl, because then you're dead. All right. So I want to make sure that we differentiate from some of this. And in my first book, The Octopus of Global Control, I did an entire several pages called Another Side of the Coin. And I laid out some of the ways in which psychedelics had been demonized, some of the benefits and things like that. But I also brought in quotes, as you know, as the format of the Octopus book is quotes from a lot of people. And I've had Dennis McKenna on the show and talking about psychedelics, of course. But his brother Terrence, who sadly passed away, I think in 2000, he was a quote machine. I mean, in the book, I've got 700 quotes from 500 different people, but nobody's quotes were as good as Terrence's. So I want to read a couple of them to you because I think it's nice. It kind of punctuates. He explains things in a logical way, but he adds a little bit of humor. And if you've never heard Terrence McKenna talk, you need to go watch a video of him talking, because he talks like a little nerd, you know, but he's really interesting. He's got this voice. And you listen to him, he's kind of hypnotic and funny. So when he says it, when I read his quotes, I hear his voice in my head. So this is what he said. Psychedelics are illegal, not because a loving government is concerned that you may jump out of a third story window. Psychedelics are illegal because they dissolve opinion structures and culturally laid down models of behavior and information processing. They open you up to the possibility that everything you know is wrong. Well, so that actually kind of plays a little bit into this, because I want to talk to you about the drug schedule And the drug schedule is, when he said it's illegal, not because a loving government is worried about you jumping out of a third story window. He's correct. Let me tell you what schedule one of the drugs are, let me tell you the drugs that are labeled as schedule one. And to be schedule one, this is the designation you need to have. And I want you to keep this in mind when you hear the second one on this list, because you're going to be like, what the fuck are they talking about? But the criteria for being schedule one is no known medical benefits. Okay. You ready for the list? Number one, on schedule one, heroin. Fine. I can live with that. Number two, marijuana. Ooh. Number three, LSD. Number four, peyote. Number five, ecstasy. Number six, mushrooms. Number seven, bath salts. Okay, I think we can agree with bath salts. When I think of bath salts, I think of that image. I don't know if you guys remember it from a couple of years ago, where this guy was out of his fucking mind in Miami on bath salts, and he was trying to eat some guy's face. When I hear bath salts, I immediately go to guy trying to eat another guy's face in Miami. And I go, okay, I'm good. I don't need that. My life is fulfilled without having that experience. And heroin, never done it, never even seen it, have no interest in it. Schedule one for heroin, I can live with that. Marijuana, really? No known medical benefits for marijuana? Then let me ask you this, government. Why do you have medical marijuana dispensaries all over the place? If there's no known medical benefits, how do you have medical marijuana dispensaries? Riddle me this, because it doesn't make any sense, because it's not supposed to make any sense. It's the government, after all, and they're fucking crazy, and they want to control you, and they want to tell you, they want to be daddy government and tell you what you can and can't do. But if you notice what's on this list, LSD, peyote, ecstasy, it is not a psychedelic, but LSD, peyote, and mushrooms. Those are all psychedelics. Schedule one, no medicinal benefits for mushrooms or LSD or peyote? Well, I'm going to get to this in a second and show you where there's hundreds of millions of dollars flowing in to establish companies surrounding the medical benefits of mushrooms, LSD, and peyote. So again, straight up bullshit, no medicinal benefits, except for the medicinal benefits that Peter Thiel is investing in. Schedule two, Vicodin, schedule two, some known medical benefits. I mean, like marijuana, like easily you drop marijuana down to schedule two, right? Some known, I'm not even saying you have to agree that it is medically beneficial to everybody every time. I would never say that. It is to some people. So why not drop marijuana down to schedule two? Because then you can't round up black people and put them in prison on long stretches at private prisons. Everybody knows that. Duh. Schedule two, Vicodin, oxycodone, cocaine, methamphetamines, Ritalin, Adderall, and opium. I'm sorry. Did I miss the chemistry class where they told you the medical benefits of cocaine? Oh, I guess back in the like early 1900s, right, when it was like cocaine tooth powder, you know, it's like, oh, doctor, my tooth is hurting. And you're like, oh, let me give you this cocaine powder, and you put it on, it numbs it all up. Yeah, it'll numb your whole face. That's what cocaine does. But I just want to point out the obvious miscalculation in this, that according to the United States Schedule of Drugs, marijuana is far more dangerous for you than methamphetamines. That's all you need to know to just take this schedule and just go throw it away. I mean, you can't throw it away, because legally they'll put you in long prison stretches for schedule one drugs. So you have to be very careful. You know, you can have schedule three is ketamine, steroids, and testosterone. You can have a pocket full of ketamine and you're fine compared to a couple stems and caps of mushrooms. You see how that works? Because it's schedule one. Why do you think it's schedule one? I mean, mushrooms are, let me get to this point. Mushrooms are safer than alcohol and marijuana, less medical treatment needed than any other drug. Less calls for emergency. Less freakouts, less people getting taken to the hospital. Of all of the drugs, including alcohol and marijuana, the safest one, statistically speaking, according to calling the police or calling medical or, you know, seeking medical attention, the number one safest drug is mushrooms, according to this list. Yet it's Schedule I drug. Why is that? It goes back to Terrence's point. Not because the government is concerned with keeping you from doing LSD and jumping out of a third floor window. They don't give a shit about that or you. They don't want you doing this stuff because they don't want you to open your mind to the possibilities of being able to imagine a new structure of power that doesn't include a daddy government at the top. It doesn't include the state running your lives. It doesn't include you having to ask for permission to build a shed in your backyard. When you do psychedelic drugs, for better or for worse, you see the world differently afterwards. Now, again, I want to be crystal clear. I'm not advocating for people to go out and overdo it with this stuff, because we've all seen the guy talking to his shoe on the street corner, you know, and you go, oh, that guy took too much acid. You know, so most definitely do not be that guy. And I don't want to say this is, oh, God damn. Now I feel like I have to turn into a lawyer or something. This show is for entertainment purposes only. It's not, let me read the C60 disclaimer, because I think it'll probably fit. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. Am I covered now? Holy shit. No, but seriously, I mean, the worst thing you can do with any of these drugs, but especially psychedelics, is be disrespectful to them, is to not show the proper amount of respect. Like, oh, fucking hey, man, I'm going to take a bunch of acid. We're going to go to this party. Don't do that. Okay. Do not do that. That is a recipe for disaster. But I do want people to recognize that when you just say drugs, man, drugs are bad. Okay. But what are we talking about here? Because on Schedule 4, we've got Xanax, Soma, Valium, Ambien, and Rohypnol. We have roofies. Roofies is Schedule 4. Marijuana is Schedule 1. Are you out of your fucking mind? Date rape's cool. Totally fine. Just knock people out with that. Oh, you have a joint in your pocket? You're going to prison forever. This is insanity. But this is what happens when you allow, you know, I don't know, when you allow white devils to get into Congress and start passing these laws, and you're like, we will never let you smoke the devil's lettuce, you're a bad person, and all this stuff. Really? I you know, look, again, back to Terrence. Part of what psychedelics do is they decondition you from cultural values. This is what makes it such a political hot potato. Since all culture is kind of a con game, the most dangerous candy you can hand out is one which causes people to start questioning the rules of the game. And you go, well, that's Terrence. You know, he's a crazy guy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he had all these multiple degrees and, you know, he was a professor and, you know, ethnobotanist and an author and a super duper smart guy. But he's crazy, right? You know, he's just a druggie. Okay, maybe. How about this? How about this quote? I'm going to read this quote first, and then I'm going to tell you who said it at the end. And then let's see if this is where the name comes. This is where the chapter name came from, and this is where the episode name came from. Taking LSD was a profound experience. One of the most important things in my life. LSD shows you that there's another side to the coin, and you can't remember it when it wears off, but you know it. It reinforced my sense of what was important. Creating great things instead of making money, putting things back into the stream of history and of human consciousness as much as I could. Steve Jobs. Okay. So, again, if Steve Jobs is acknowledging that LSD was one of the most important things in his entire life, that it changed the way he saw the world. And Steve Jobs, we know he was a tyrant in the office. Let's take that out of it for a second. Let's talk about visionary. Let's talk about a guy that knew how to sell, who knew what products to look like. He knew what products would work. He knew how they had to function. He knew, you know, that vibe where you could you remember those Apple commercials when Steve Jobs was running the company? The second time around, not the early times with the Macs, but when he came back in 2000s and started with the iPad and the iMac and all that stuff, that is Steve Jobs at his peak. And what he is saying is one of the most important things in my life was taking LSD, otherwise known as acid. So again, no medicinal value, no medical benefits, say the government. But listen to Terrence, listen to Steve. They're telling you, change my life. I saw the world in a whole different way. So again, why do you think these things are illegal? They cause you to start questioning the rules of the game, as Terrence said. And we can't have that. When you're running the game and you need people to do what you want them to do, what you tell them to do, you set up the rules of the game. The last thing you want people to do is to go, oh, these rules are stupid. I'm not following these rules. Who set up these rules? I don't want to do that. You know, and so much of what we believe is, you know, well, I'm going to need to see the evidence that this works. I'm going to need to see proof. You're talking about mushrooms. You're talking about this. I'm going to need to see it. I'm going to need to see it to believe it. All right. Well, I take you to author David Wong. A quote in this Octopus book. And this quote doesn't just apply to psychedelics. I put it in here specifically because of this, but I think it applies to all facets of our lives. He said this: the human eye has to be one of the cruelest tricks nature ever pulled. We can see a tiny cone-shaped area of light right in front of our faces, restricted to a very narrow band of the electromagnetic spectrum. We can't see around walls. We can't see heat or cold. We can't see electricity or radio signals. We can't see at a distance. It is a sense so limited that we might as well not have it. Yet we have evolved to depend so heavily on it as a species that all other perception has atrophied. We have wound up with the utterly mad and often fatal delusion that if we can't see something, it doesn't exist. Virtually all of civilization's failures can be traced back to that one ominous sentence: I'll believe it when I see it. Look, there's benefits in these, you know, and if you're, you know, sometimes you're going to have to be out there looking for it. You know, if you're waiting to hear how acid transforms people's lives, you know, the only thing you're going to get from the nightly news is that it'll turn you into a homeless guy talking to himself, which, look, to be clear, could happen. I don't want to discount that. I mean, know your boundaries, know what's going on. I often liked, especially, you know, in these quotes that I brought in, the comedians were my favorite because they saw the world in a way that allowed them to mock it to just the right degree. And I got a Bill Hicks quote here. This one to me is fantastic. Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration, that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. Here's Tom with the weather. Could you imagine, man? You know, psychedelics have been going mainstream, right? They're starting to use MDMA, which is a street name, is ecstasy, to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. People coming back from, actually they used ecstasy in the early 80s in marriage counseling therapy sessions in Texas, and they had great results with it, but it was under some sort of controlled studied environment. So of course, you know, again, MDMA ecstasy is a Schedule I drug, so there are no known medical benefits, you know, except for all the medical benefits that it has. But they're in clinical trials right now with MDMA to treat post-traumatic stress disorder and also mushrooms to treat depression. And the U.S. Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, acronym MAPS, not to be confused with MAP, which is minor attracted person. Very different. You don't want to be a MAP. But MAPS, U.S. Association, has raised $30 million in 2020 to study and complete a phase 3 trial in the use of MDMA to treat PTSD. This is a necessary step in order to get FDA approval, you know. So you've got to go through these clinical trials, and it's happening right now. A UK company called Compass Pathways has raised more than $115 million for the psilocybin treatment for depression. Of course, that sounds great, and that is great, but then you find out that Peter Thiel is connected, you know, and you go, oh, that's not good. And then you find out that Tavistock Institute is connected, and you go, oh, that's not good either. That's from Steve Poikin, and a credit to him on this. So, you know, you go, wow, they're making great strides, you know, they're treating this seriously. They're taking it seriously. They're wanting to explore this. And then you go, well, that's what we've always wanted. We've wanted them to finally just put away the idea that, like, you know, psychedelics are going to turn you into a twirling hippie in the parking lot of a Phish concert and everything. Well, it might, and actually it probably will, but not permanently. But you know, that we wanted it to be taken seriously, and now it finally is starting to be taken seriously. But then, if, like anything, you've got to follow the money. And when I see Peter Thiel involved, I go, okay, well, he's also involved in Ambrosia, which is where they take the young blood from kids and then they sell it to old people so that it will help them heal better. And you go, oh, well, that's just one step away from drinking adrenochrome as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not on board with any of that bullshit. And I'm not on board with Peter Thiel doing this stuff. But, you know, again, he's probably been to a bunch of Burning Mans, you know, out in the desert. And he's like, oh, this is crazy. And God knows Peter Thiel's probably taken enough acid, I'm just speculating, to understand that there is another side to the coin. To understand that these, well, hang on a second. Let's not be so quick to just dismiss all this stuff as drugs and put it in the same category as fentanyl, right? That'll kill you. You know, there's something to this. Let's examine it. If we don't examine it, we're being idiotic, really. You know, if you understand that these substances have been around for a long time. We didn't discover this. We didn't discover mushrooms. We didn't discover ayahuasca. Ayahuasca has been around for thousands of years. You know, the tribes in the Amazon, when they asked them, like, how in the fuck did you figure this out? You've got 125,000 different species of trees and vines and roots growing in the Amazon. How did you know that you take the leaves from one tree and the root system from another and you blend them together, you know, in a concoction and brew it for 3 days and it tastes like piss, and you drink this and it takes you to the edge of the universe? How did you ever figure this out? That's like statistically or scientifically almost impossible to find that combination. How did you do it? Their response: the jungle told us how to do it. And you go, get out of here with that bullshit. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sitting in a session with a head full of ayahuasca, remembering that quote that I put in the book. The jungle told them how to do it. As crazy as that sounds, as disconnected as that sounds to our sober minds right now, I got to tell you, it made a whole lot of sense. I went, of course that makes sense. How the jungle told, I don't know. But I felt that, oh yeah. Oh, speaking of that, I gotta find the quote. In a nod to Graham Hancock, I have to find the quote about about ayahuasca because I put it in the book. And again, while I was during the session, I was thinking about Graham's quote. He said, "It's one of these tastes that is unforgettably awful. Consider a pile of old socks, some raw sewage, some battery acid, some sulfur, and just a hint of chocolate." And so I drank mine and I was like, oh my God, this is without a doubt the worst thing I have ever consumed in my entire life. And then I ran into Graham and I said, hey, I just have to tell you this story that while I was in this ceremony, I was remembering the quote that I had of yours that I put in the book as I was downing this, you know, the whole pile of it. And I got done telling it and he just looks at me and he goes, like he was reliving drinking it, and it made him like queasy just hearing me talk about it, you know? So look, this stuff is ancient, and I personally feel way more comfortable with the natural substances, mushrooms, peyote, ayahuasca. I mean, they seem, it's funny to call them natural, but I make that differentiation between something like, something that's made in a laboratory. There's something about the natural plants that just seems like a little bit more right to do it that way. Now, I fully recognize that you can eat the wrong mushroom and wind up dead. Okay. So I'm not trying to say just go like pick any mushroom you find. Like, you got to know what you're doing, but you know, it just seems to me a little bit safer, I guess, a little bit more responsible to do the natural ones. But again, that's just me. That's just me dragging my own ideas into this experience. I mean, do what you want to do. But back to some quotes about this, because for those that don't know, ayahuasca, the plant, the two plants, the leaves and the root from this other plant, one of them is an MAOI inhibitor. And what that basically does is it goes in and tells your stomach, don't break this next substance down like you normally do. And then the second substance that comes in is DMT. And so what it's telling your, it's basically, the one part of it is telling your body to turn off the alarm system, and the other part of it is the DMT that's coming through. It's like, just chill. Don't do what you normally do, which is our bodies produce DMT all day long, you know, and it's thought to be part of the of dreaming and the like. But we have, our bodies are so good at processing it. That's why it goes through. So if people are like, oh, if you smoke DMT, it's like over in 10 minutes. Yeah, that's because your body has so much practice processing DMT, because it's processing it all the time. But the difference is that your body breaks it down easily. What ayahuasca does is that one of the plants in there tells your body, don't break this down. And, you know, allow this to kind of go through and do its thing. And that's where you get the long, you know, the trip. And an ayahuasca trip, I mean, for me, it was 12 hours we went in at 9 and I got out. Well, no, it was 10 and a half. We went in at 9. I got out at 7:30 in the morning. Yeah. It was rough and wild and all those things. But here, back to Terrence, okay? DMT, a quote from Terrence, DMT is a reliable method for crossing into a dimension that human beings have debated the existence of for 50,000 years. Is there an invisible world inhabited by active intelligences with which human beings can communicate? You bet. And if you don't think so, then tell me you don't think so after you've smoked 75 milligrams of DMT. Otherwise, we just don't have anything to talk about, you know? And it goes on and on and on, right? It goes on and on and on. These stories that you hear. If you've ever seen DMT, the spirit molecule, you'll recognize some, obviously, Joe Rogan narrates it. He's in it a little bit, you know, throughout, and he narrates it, and they show the clinical trials that Dr. Rick Strassman was putting these guys through in New Mexico to test out DMT therapy. And he was bringing in a variety of people, and some of the, and I highly recommend the documentary if you haven't seen it already. It's got DMT, the spirit molecule. And here's a quote from it, from Patricio Dominguez. And he is, he was one of the DMT volunteers, but he's also a shaman. So a guy that knows his way around psychedelics, he knows his way around sort of the mysterious world of, you know, being sort of one foot in consciousness and one foot out. He's not unfamiliar with this territory, but even this is what he had to say about DMT. He said, "So Laura removes the eye shades, and I ask, not really with my eyes open quite yet, I ask, how long was I gone? Because I needed to know. And Rick Strassman chimes in, 15 minutes. For a moment, I'm shocked. The mind has to catch up, because now the whole cognitive dissonance of the experience has to catch up. I was gone for 15 minutes? 1,000 years of experience in 15 minutes? Well, to say the least, it was profound. It was profound. So it's very disorienting in terms of the timing of it all. And so I'll follow up with a secondary. There's another DMT volunteer, Susan Blumenthal. She was a writer. She also was in the movie. And she says this about it. This is a wild one. This is four paragraphs. So hang in there for a second. But this is Susan Blumenthal. And you watch her and the thing. She's just like, I don't know, in her late 50s, maybe early 60s, normal lady who's a writer. And she signed up for this wild trip, just, you know, this to be a part of this experiment and see what it was all about. This is what she had to say. And I think it helps because she's a writer. She said, "There was no concept of time. It was so disorienting. I was so terrified. I have never in my entire life been so terrified to be blasted out of my body, to leave my body behind, to be going at warp speed backward through my own DNA, out the other end and into the universe. Suddenly, I was in this huge void with these beings on the other side, and I put out my hand and this incredible rainbow of pink light went between me and these entities. And I was trying to make it be a white light, but it was this incredible pink light, this energy of love, this capacity of love that we as human beings have that I was trying to send to them. I looked around at my environment and I was trying to absorb everything to understand, but there were all of these machines or structures or things that I've never seen before that I had no idea what they were. I was like a caveman in a computer lab. I didn't have any idea, but I knew in my intellectual awareness that this was a very advanced civilization or life forms or whatever they were, so far advanced from what we know from here on Earth. It was all very impersonal until I got to the space where I realized that I was in the area where souls await rebirth. And I was there, and I had been there so many times before. I recognized it, and this incredible transcendent peace came over me. I have never in my life ever felt such peace." Damn. From being terrified of being blasted through your body, you know, as she described it, warp speed backwards through my own DNA, and then spit out into the universe and coming across and seeing this whole thing and going from that terrible, speaking of roller coaster rides, holy shit, to coming out in this place where you see the soul factory going on and you go, "I recognize this place. I've been here before. Holy shit." You know, and then to leave that and say that you've never in my entire life ever felt such peace. You know, Think about this from a governmental standpoint. Would you want people to know about this? No way. You lose total control of everybody. It's like trying to herd cats after that, man. You got billions of people all doing their own thing after that. You cannot have that. As a government trying to control people and get them to do what you want them to do for whatever reason it is or the reason you want them to do it, you have got to have them all on the same page. You can't have a bunch of people doing DMT running around going, this is all bullshit. You can't have that. That will sink your organization real fast. So I understand why the governments do it. I don't like it, obviously, but I understand. I want to go back to 1971, United Nations Convention of Psychotropic Substances placed psychedelics in its most restrictive category, Schedule 1, above drugs such as fentanyl, methamphetamine, and cocaine. I read the 28-page document about it. And on their international list, again, Schedule 1, LSD, MDMA, which is ecstasy, mescaline, mushrooms, DMT. Schedule 2, methamphetamines, amphetamines, and PCP. PCP is Schedule 2? PCP is more dangerous than mushrooms? Are you out of your mind? Dudes smoke PCP and then go bust through car windows with their bare hands and like, I'm sorry, I would... But again, the United Nations is involved in this. So are we surprised? No, we're not surprised. We're not surprised at all because the United Nations is not interested in your best interest. They're not interested in you becoming the best version of yourself or realizing the mysteries of the universe. The United Nations wants 90% of the people dead and the other 10% living in a one world government that they control. So again, if you live your life by the credo of whatever the government tells me to do, I'm going to do the exact opposite. Just understand that the most dangerous drugs, according to the government, as far as the government is concerned, the most dangerous drugs are all psychedelics. Not because they're actually dangerous, but because they're dangerous to them. They're dangerous to the establishment. Terrence said it. I got to read this one. Speaking of Terrence quotes, and like I said, he's a quote machine. His stuff is so funny. But you got this is his description of DMT. I don't know if this is going to make you want to take it or make you never want to take it. But this is what he said. And again, you have to kind of hear his voice, you know, his scrambling little voice. What happens on DMT is a troop of elves smashes down your front door and rotates and balances the wheels of the after-death vehicle, present you with the bill, then depart. It's completely paradigm-shattering. I mean, union with the white light you could handle. An invasion of your apartment by jeweled self-dribbling basketballs from hyperspace that are speaking in demotic Greek is not something you anticipated and can handle. Sometimes people say, is DMT dangerous? It sounds so crazy. The answer is only if you fear death by astonishment. He goes on to say, DMT raises all the questions in a hurry. It's so intense and so oriented towards the other and the visual and the hallucinogenic that it isn't really like a drug. It's more like an event that you ran into. You just came around a corner and there was the unspeakable. I love that one. And again, so since we're talking about laws, we're talking about drug schedules, Graham Hancock had this to say, I think it's obvious that psychedelics are demonized and illegalized by our society because somewhere in our society are controlling minds that realize that these substances have the potential, have the power to unpick the controlling hierarchy. That's why it's a Schedule 1 drug. Again, not because they care about you jumping out of a window. They'll push you out of a window. Ask James Forrestal. They quite literally pushed him out of a window. So the government has no problems with windows or you going through them and falling. Okay. What they don't want is their empire falling. What they don't want is a bunch of people coming to the realization, hey, why are those people in charge of us? We don't need them. They're obsolete. Because once everybody figures that out, it's over. And of course, they can't have that. And you'll find these
you'll find musicians talking about this stuff. I put a good quote in here from Paul Simon from his song Spirit Voices, which is in the Rhythm of the Saints album that came out in 1989. Really great. It was that follow-up, you know, Graceland in 85 won Album of the Year. And then he followed it up with Rhythm of the Saints. And they said, well, how did you write that album? He says, well, I went to the Amazon and I went deep, deep in the Amazon and got really inspired. I don't know if you guys know or care anything about that, but Graceland, the album he did before, was really African based. And they were wondering, like, hey, how are you going to follow this up? He's like, well, this time I went to South America and I went in the Amazon and I kind of got myself lost there for a while. And this album came out of it. And one of the songs, Spirit Voices, it says, some stories are magical, meant to be sung. Songs from the mouth of the river when the world was young and all these spirit voices ruled the night. My hands are numb. My feet were lead. I drank a cup of herbal brew. The sweetness in the air combined with the lightness in my head, and I heard the jungle breathing in the bamboo. So he's talking about his ayahuasca adventure. You know, much like Sting was, wired to the entire cosmos. It is a direct access to the Godhead. There is definitely a higher intelligence at work. That's Sting explaining his ayahuasca trip. Let's talk about some of the medical components. So Yale researchers found that a single dose of psilocybin, which is the technical name for the psilocybin mushrooms, you know, the active ingredient in mushrooms, given to mice prompted an immediate and long-lasting increase in connections between neurons. Now, this is what I was saying when I was in college, and I was saying, I don't know what it is. I'm not a organic biologist and I don't understand how it all works, but I felt different afterwards. I just felt different. I didn't know how to describe it. But what this study did is it showed that it was reconnecting neural pathways that had been disconnected before. So here's a quote from the author of the study, a guy named Alex Kwan. He said, We not only saw a 10% increase in the number of neuronal connections, but also they were on average about 10% larger. So the connections were stronger as well. He's talking about these, the studies that they did into using psilocybin to reconnect neuropathways that had disconnected just over time. These compounds increase. So this is what they found. They found that the psilocybin, when given to rats or mice, I guess, the compound increases the density of the dendritic spines, small protrusions found on nerve cells, which aid in the transmission of information between neurons. Chronic stress and depression are known to reduce the number of these neuroconnections. It's a process called synaptic atrophy. Those connections that were there before, they just disconnect over time, caused by stress, caused by, you know, depression and stress. They disconnect from one another. What they're showing was that with psilocybin, not only did they reconnect, but they reconnected and the connections were stronger. As they said, we not only saw a 10% increase in the number of neuronal connections, but on average, they were 10% larger too. So it reconnects your pathways. That's why it's being treated for depression. They're saying a lot of these people have problems with like prefrontal cortex issues and everything. They're saying, well, their synapses are disconnected. If we can connect them back, then it'll work. So what did they do? Ran these mice through studies, and they found the mice noticed changes, or they noticed changes in the mice that they were able to measure within 24 hours. The changes were still present a month later. The mice subjected to stress showed behavioral improvements. So after they did it, they then stressed the mice out and the mice didn't react the same way they had before. And the mice had increased neurotransmitter activity. So it's working. He went on to say, Alex Kwan, the author of the study, went on to say, it was a real surprise to see such enduring changes from just one dose of psilocybin. These new connections may be the structural changes the brain uses to store new experiences. You go, interesting. So it's untapped therapeutic potential here with these drugs, man, with these drugs. It works for OCD, and it's shown that it's working for addiction as well, you know. Psilocybin was granted breakthrough therapy designation by the FDA in 2019. So it is on its way to, now, of course, the FDA will corrupt it and will bastardize it and do all the things that they do. But they are at least acknowledging that there are some, that it has been granted breakthrough therapy as a designation. It's still schedule one though, because, you know, no medicinal benefit at all ever under any circumstances. But here's something interesting. I wasn't ready for this one. University of California, Davis is a school, UC Davis, study found that LSD and DMT promote neuroplasticity and development, indicating a potential mechanism for their therapeutic benefits. In fact, LSD was the most potent of all of them that they tried. It was better than ketamine. It was better than anything else. So again, I warn people about LSD because it's a chemical. You don't know who's making it. You don't know who, you know, you don't know. So, but UC Davis has done a study showing that, you know, it's not just psilocybin mushrooms that are having these great connections. It's not just MDMA that's working for PTSD. But also LSD, acid, and DMT are having tremendous success as well. Yeah, and the studies that they're working on have shown that it may actually repair damaged brain cells, which is crazy to me. So I want to read this quote. This is from Luisa Prokosova, Cognitive Psychology Unit at Leiden Institute for Brain and Cognition. She says, taken together, our results suggest that consuming a microdose of psilocybin allowed participants to create more out-of-the-box alternative solutions for a problem, thus providing preliminary support for the assumption that microdosing improves divergent thinking. Now, I have always suggested this. I have no proof. Let me be clear. I have no proof, but I think that, and maybe I should do a study. I don't know. Maybe I should do a poll with all the podcasting people that I know. But I've always suggested that the people that are into this stuff, the alternative media, you know, that we're all digging around, understanding that the government is crazy and they're doing bad things to us, those of us that are authors or podcasters that are really focused in this stuff. I have suggested that I think a common denominator, maybe not in every case, but in a lot of cases, is that we have all tried psychedelics. I think it opens you up to the possibility that everything that you know is wrong, as Terrence said. And I think that is important to do, because it's okay. We're going to get it wrong. Everything, you know, you're going to get it wrong. It's important to get it right, you know, in the end. And I think that because we have this neuroplasticity, this flexibility in our brain, it allows us to be a little bit more flexible in our thoughts. It allows us to not just be so rigid in that, oh, it's this way. It's only this way. Well, is it? Can we see it from another angle? Are we allowed to do that? Will we allow ourselves to do it? And what it's showing in a study is that these substances change your brain in a very real way and allow you to see things that maybe other people aren't seeing or don't want to see. So I think it's interesting to, you know, I think that it's important for us to not be so dismissive and say, well, these are just drugs, and, you know, drugs are bad, you know? Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, you know, we just have to, recognize that there are some benefits in some of these, not for every person, not every time. And I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, if you go do half a bag of mushrooms that you're going to come out fixed or anything like that. But it does allow you to see things from a different perspective. And sometimes that's what we need, you know. from Graham Hancock. We'll wrap up with this. This is from his band TED Talk called The War on Consciousness, which, by the way, if you want to make a TED Talk really popular, ban it. Because once they did, his TED Talk got like tens of millions of views. But this is what he said. We live in a society that will send us to prison if we make use of time-honored sacred plants to explore our own consciousness. Yet surely the exploration and expansion of the miracle of our consciousness is the essence of what it is to be human. By demonstrating and persecuting whole areas of consciousness, we may be denying ourselves the next vital step in our own evolution. It's not too late. Legalize it. Thanks, everybody. If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression, the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you later.